Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
A grain of rice. It's going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Okay, welcome everybody to the Irish Examiner GAA podcast, brought to you again in association with Allianz, proud sponsors of the GAA. We're here to look ahead to the National League that's kicking off this weekend, all four divisions. We've got Tony McEntee, Tony Lean and Colm O'Neill. I'm Mike Quirk. I think before we get there, lads, I suppose we want to just have a look at these new kind of rules that are after being thrown at us and are being modified and changed every so often. And the big one is the advanced mark, I suppose, really. Tony, what's your first take on our game going a little bit more like Aussie rules football?
I suppose my first comment on this is that it's a reflection of where the GAA is at the minute. Like, we don't know where we stand. Our rules are changing on a daily basis. The interpretation of the rules are clearly not taught out. We have, as far as I can see, a leadership deficit here. You know, we absolutely no clarity through club nor county or anything in relation to where rules are starting here. And the mark is an example of that. So it started off as a simple mark, kick the ball in, you catch it. Now there's confusion over whether it's defenders catch it or forwards catch it, the distance involved in it. What happens when you catch it? Do you take your four steps or do you get, what does the defender do? Does he stay off you? I spoke to a man recently from Down, admittedly, and he was talking about another Ulster County team, who I'll not name, and their tactic at the minute is when you catch the ball from a mark, is to put the arms around you to prevent you raising your hand, so you can't take the mark. And now I'm led to believe that you can wait 3 seconds or four steps or something else before you can lift your hand. You know, this is a nonsense.
Above in Leash, obviously, we've had three or four games with it now, three of the O'Byrne Cup games and then one of the Challenge game as well, and four different referees, and it's been interpreted differently on the four different occasions. But the clarification that we've got now is that every time that ball is kicked over 20 metres from outside the 45 and a guy catches the clean inside, that the whistle is going to sound and the mark is going to be awarded only when he then raises his hand. So if you can catch that ball, run your two or three steps and then decide, no, do you know what, I'm going to kick the mark, you can then raise your hand and you still get awarded the mark. But there's even a little bit of mud. If you catch the ball inside the square, if you catch the ball inside the square now that's been kicked from outside the 45, the whistle will sound. You can put up your hand, or before you put up your hand, the defender can't touch you for four steps anywhere in the field. So if you win the ball inside the large square, you can run your four steps and the defender is not allowed to touch you. If the defender tackles you inside the four steps, there's a penalty awarded. If the defender knocks the ball, it's a 30 metre free because it's a technical foul as opposed to a personal foul or whatever. So it's just going to be, I think, the early rounds of the National League. And the National League is one thing, lads, but when this goes down to your club football, it's going to be some crack.
You're saying that you got clarification. What you got is an interpretation from a referee, because I'm looking at the rules here in front of me and I got the clarification sent with a GAA banner on it, and there's no such thing as that. And this was sent to me last night from the county board to all the club people last night. So none of those clarifications are on us. So what you're getting is an interpretation from one of five referees you've now seen.
I just think, just because purely we're having discussion here, like, it's going to be next to near impossible for the refs to think of all these things. I just hope it's not going to turn into like the Premier League and after every game was going to be talk. It's going to be like VAR all over again. Is it going to be nobody's going to be talking about the games. Not sure what's happening. The game is going to turn into these new rule marks, you know, which is, it's going to be interesting. I just hope it won't spoil the game.
Yeah, and like I read something last week. It was the numbers, they had the statistics from the National League last year and compared it with the National League from 2017, and the number of kick passes into the 45 was gone up something like 20% from the previous year.
Less fist passing.
You know, less fist passing, number of kick passes increased, the number of 50-50 contests, you know, for to go win a ball had increased. So in one sense, the mark was successful in incentivizing kick passing back into it, when back in 16, 17, the big problem was we're saying the game is just turning into basketball and it's all hand passing. So now this clarification is kind of muddying the water a little bit. But initially, the mark was probably successful in terms of getting that ball being kicked back in there again, Colm.
Yeah. Since when actually the rules came out, when the mark was introduced, I probably wasn't a fan of it, to be honest. Because I just think from watching, if it's going to be more like the Aussie rules game, I've watched one or two Aussie rules game and it's not very good viewing, to be honest. I just think it's going to slow up the game, especially for inside forwards.
But has it been used, Colm? Is any county using it presently? I'm speaking again to more likely the Ulster counties in this case, and in the pre-challenge games at the minute, the ones that's been on the past couple of weeks. One county manager said that he's seen it three times by the opposition and once by him, the mark has happened. So is it really an issue for us here? Is it something that we really need to get into? Like, is it more smoke and mirrors than anything else?
I think so. I think Mike might be best to answer this, but I don't know. If I was a manager, should you be building your game plan just around a specific mark? I think you just kind of take it as it comes. I don't know. Should you be changing your style of play just to suit the mark, to be honest?
You're going to be looking at 25, 40 attacks maybe in a whole game, depends on who the opposition is. And you're going to be worried about three or four marks in a whole game when you have 25 or 30 or 40 opportunities elsewhere.
I think I was at a couple of the pre-season games as well. I was at a couple of the McGrath Cup games, Colm, and it was, you know what, you actually forgot about it. You actually, because it wasn't actually activated. I mean, I think the Conor McManus, as we call it, the Conor McManus role, I think there is a benefit in that. And I think players, Mike, as you said, or teams who actually like to kick the ball 30, 40 yards will get benefit out of that. But that ball that's going to be gained in the half-forward line, 40 yards from goal, and I think that's fine. Like, the way Mike explained it there, I was lost, Mike. I was lost after 10 seconds of what you were even saying there. You were into phase three there, and I had nodded off. I mean, you're kind of saying, how is the first two or three games of the league? I hear what you're saying, but as you said, I don't even want to think of what this means at club level.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be bedlam at club level because...
It's going to be pandemonium from people in the crowd who think they know the rules, who don't know the rules. It's going to be roaring into the refs. It's just going to be...
But the bottom there is that the GAA is not catering for club. So GAA is not worried about club. You know what I mean? They're sending in directions. And I'm away from the county at the minute, so I'm obviously involved in the club. And I can see this. Now, Mike, I said this already, you're in a bubble. You don't see anything but the county at the minute. You can't see anything wrong with the county. But the club football is struggling massively here. And the county boards have been given directions. And the academy coaches have been given directions. And the reality is that club football is going to die a death very, very quickly.
Yeah, and look, I can. There's loads of problems, Tony. Like, and we're not going to be solving them on a Thursday morning. But like, the only thing I will say about the mark, and I think we need to, like, all of these changes, you need to see it in a bit of context now over a couple of games, and the first few rounds of the National League will give us a bit of context. I still think the whole reason it was brought in was because the game was becoming. It was overly defensive with a load of bodies and we weren't kick passing the ball enough. And the first year it was brought in, we saw an increase in the kick passing back into the forwards, which is what we wanted to see. And now this clarification is just adding a little bit of muck. Again, you move on to the sin bin, lads. The sin bin is another one that's going to be very interesting when it gets to club level for referees that don't have a watch that's able to put on 2 10 minutes at the one go. Like, the sin bin is actually going to be, I think, a really, really good addition to the rules from what was there as the traditional black card, where a guy gets replaced straight away, which is no real penalty. I've seen it already. If you lose a guy here for 10 minutes, it's actually a real penalty for cynical play now, and I think that's going to be a really positive step for the National League and for anything below that as well.
I'm not so sure. I think it's going to be open to abuse as well. Yes, in the early parts of the game, and yes, but like with 5 minutes left of a match or anything else, you might as well take a red card as a black card at that stage. You know, you're going to be losing a player. I think it seems to have worked well in the ladies' football and introduced well in that. I just I'm open to giving it time in the
explain, Mac, how can it be used cynically? Explain to me, how can a sin bin be used cynically by the team losing the ban?
Well, you can waste the time, obviously. Like, if you're a team after being relegated to 14 bodies, you have a couple of injuries and you've whatever, because that's the problem. It's a running clock.
Yes.
But like, if you're going down to 14 men or you're going down to 13 men, it's a lot heftier punishment rather than having somebody else to be able to come on straight away. That was no real punishment.
But Mike, so if it's a running clock, I mean, are you saying that the referee has no authority to intervene, like after 2 minutes, if suddenly your man is down holding his leg for the next 3 minutes? Is that actually 5 minutes of the sin bin done?
That's 5 minutes of the sin bin done.
Yeah.
And at the end of full time, if you're going to a drawing match and it goes to extra time, that black card runs into the sin bin, runs into extra time. Okay. Whereas a red card gets replaced in extra time.
Just with the individual or with the 14? In other words, the individual can't come back on or can come back on?
The sin bin player cannot come back on the next time until his clock runs out.
Okay.
The next time. Whereas if you take the red card instead of taking the black card, then you replace with 15 in next time.
Jesus.
And then back again, like, that's it's all
the cynicism. Yeah. The cynicism is unbelievable. Like, you know, Jesus.
Like, it's all well and good talking about inter-county, but bringing that down to club.
Yeah.
And I'm playing with a junior club who wouldn't be usually blessed with numbers again, like, and you're talking about sin bins and using extra players and referees. Like, referee might come in his own, he might have no linesmen to help him out. Like, you know, it's just going to be very hard.
They're moving on there, and they're going to look at the Mayor Fonia, obviously, and that's a big issue for them, and it's going to be a big issue for you. Like, and I suppose you're the only one that's playing inter-county football here, managing inter-county football. So how are you as a manager incorporating these rules into training?
You're incorporating them. You want to have a look at them and see what's happening. But again, it's like Cullum said, it's not a big, massive part of what you're trying to do. I mean, all the basics are what you're trying to do. You're trying to get guys fit. You're trying to get them playing to some bit of a bit of an organisation. And then you're trying to make them aware of the marks and the different things. But it's not a focus of your training session, you know. I think as games go on, I think the big difference with the mark last year to this year is now that we know it is there in the championship. So your Dublins and your Kerrys and your Mayos and all the boys that are at the top of the tree will be looking for ways to exploit it. And like anything, if other teams are seeing the top teams finding ways to, you know, to really get the most out of it, that's going to filter down to your lower divisions and your clubs and everybody else. And again, look, I think if we're doing something in the game to try and get teams kicking the ball more into the forwards and to increase the number of kicks and reduce the number of hand passes, I'm willing to give it a go and to see how it works out. And if after four or five games we're saying this is a disaster, it's changing football for the worse, then we'll say, okay, we need to do something now and take action. But I don't see the harm in at least exploring it at the top level and seeing where it goes and how teams can get value out of it. And again, like, I'm not a big fan of these rules having to be completely blanketed across club level. Like, I'd have no problem if this mark was a part of inter-county football but not a part of club football, you know. But this idea that it has to be one rule for everybody, I would disagree with that totally. It's a completely different game. And if you're playing junior football, I don't think the same referees have to be, you know, they're not going to have the same understanding or awareness of the rules and implementing them. And it's just an awful lot more pressure and hassle for guys who are getting 30 quid to doing a game at junior level or intermediate or senior club level that they don't need.
They won't have the help or support that inter-county refs are going to have in league games, championship games. Like, so it's going to be really unfair.
And there will be mistakes. Like, there's going to be mistakes with these things, and players are going to misinterpret what's going on, and referees will make mistakes. But I think if you give it four or five rounds of this National League, we'll see where it is, and after that, make a call about whether we need to put pressure on people to scrap them or do whatever, you know. But for now, they're there, and you're going to just have to get on with it and see where we go, I suppose, you know. And like, speaking of that National League, lads, I suppose the big one obviously is Saturday night. It'll be interesting to see how many people we get in Croke Park for the repeat of last year's two All-Ireland finals, I suppose, to replay and the drawing game, Kerry in Dublin. An early season one, and I suppose with the way the results went in the Sigerson and stuff, Peter Keane is pretty happy with the way things have gone, Cullum. But what's your early thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think we'll have to see a lot of players with... The ten could still be on the bodies, you know. The two sets of groups are not long back from holidays. It's going to be, look, it's obviously the pick of the Division One game this weekend. I actually think there's probably more pressure, I think, on Dublin, especially the fact that, look, it's Desi's first game in charge. So I think if Dublin didn't perform or let's just say, no, it don't happen too often that Dublin didn't have one of their best days, like, and say a loss to Kerry in the first round, I think straight away there's going to be question marks. The whole Jim Gavin thing gone and Desi and losing the first game, I think it's just going to build a bit of pressure. So I'd say in the back of Desi's mind, he's going to be really anxious to come out of there with a win the first day out. So I think it's probably just slightly a bit more important for Dublin to win that one.
And like, they have Kerry, obviously, and then Mayo in the second game. So they've got a couple of big games coming down the track. What about Desi, Tony? Like, what's your take on Desi? Was he the natural kind of... first of all, I suppose with Jim gone, was that something that was... Did we really anticipate Jim was going to go, or how did you see that playing out?
So, I suppose, listen, Jim did 5 years, did awful well. There's not much can be said wrong with Jim. But when you're there that length of time and you've so much control over a county, you tend to cover up a lot of what goes on. And that's probably what Desi's issue is going to be now, is trying to pick up the slack or the issues that went on ahead with Jim and Mahanam. I see this as being completely different for Desi. He's a different manager. He'll have a different way of playing. He'll have a different approach to his backroom team. He'll have a different approach to his players. He will have to move on a few players and keep a few players. He has to make his own decisions. So, will it walk out from? Yeah, listen, I hope it does walk out from. He's put a lot of time into football and that. I wasn't particularly a fan of him with the GPA, but he has done a lot with Dublin Under-21s, etc. So I do wish him well in it, and I think he has enough at his disposal to do well. I also think they're going to be Kerry the weekend. It's the first game at home. Kerry have done probably very little. Obviously, one of the trainers, Buckley's been on holidays there for his normal sabbatical to America for the winter. So I'm not quite sure how prepared they'll be coming to Crow Park this weekend. So I do see a Dublin victory. But listen, does that mean anything for the year? No, it doesn't. It's only starting.
So. Yeah, and like that, I suppose for Desi, obviously it's going to be, and for the players, will want to give him the best possible start to that, because they'll know the kind of pressure he's coming in after a team winning five in a row and different things. But and like, you're looking for both teams in all these early rounds, is to see maybe who are the guys that weren't there last year and who have they found. And for Dublin, I suppose there's a couple of guys that'll be, Desi particularly will be familiar with those younger guys, those under 21 generation. And I mean, Cluxton, I suppose everybody in Dublin was delighted, bar Evan Comerford, that Cluxton decided to stay on. But I mean, he's what's this? What's he going into now? What season is this? Something ridiculous. 16th season, and been at the top of the tree as long as he is. I mean, like, there's a couple of those guys that people were waiting to kind of walk away into the sunset after five in a row. But whether it's because of Desi or whatever, because they're in there and they're winning and they're enjoying it, there doesn't seem to be too many of them walking away, Colm.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of players and managers and teams across the country were maybe hoping that Stephen would probably go with Jim just to give him a glimmer of hope. But one interesting thing I did hear, I know, was it Jack McCaffrey or Johnny Cooper recently? Interestingly, he said, obviously it's going to be new with Desi in there, but he said, like, it'll be actually nearly a mark of disrespect to Jim Gavin if they didn't keep up the standards and not give as much to Desi, which I thought was a mature thing to say. And it got me thinking, said, like, these lads are still clued in. Like, they see it as nearly a sign of disrespect if they drop the standards now just because they have a new manager, you know, and it's something that Jim wouldn't be too happy with either. So I think, in a sense, I'm probably still playing for him as such, you know.
Yeah, I don't see him. I don't see him dropping standards too much like that.
No, I'm just wondering, Mike, as well. You know, how important do you think the game is for Kerry, just in terms of the opposition? Forget the fact that it's the first league game. Forget even the fact that it's the All Ireland champions they're playing. It's Dublin, the All Ireland champions they're playing, and psychologically, what happened last September was very damaging. For Kerry, I mean, opportunities were there to win, certainly the first day. Mm-hmm. They didn't take them. If they were to go down on Saturday night, you know, we can attach weight too much. Look, let's face it, it's the end of January.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it would be a nice jumping off point for Kerry if they were to go up there and actually win and get a statement win.
Yeah, and like every team, they don't have, well, they have less done, Dublin and Kerry have less done than everybody else in the country, obviously, because of the holidays, and they were in Thailand and different things. But again, I think the Sigerson has probably been kind to him. I think they were looking at a situation, maybe if UCC had won, that, you know, they would have been thinner on the ground than they will be now, and they'll have the likes of Sean O'Shea and these guys available who he probably wasn't planning on having. And
Killian Spillane and these guys.
You know, and they played Roscommon in a challenge game there a couple of, maybe 2 weeks ago or less, and performed really well. well, and they're looking fairly sprightly was the word that was coming back out of the whole thing. So while they don't have a lot done, sometimes a break, and you know, these guys don't get out of, you know, they don't get into bad shape now the way, you know, it was maybe 10 years ago or whatever, but now they're all fit, they've been topped up. I think it's probably a more important game for Kerry to win if they're capable, you know what I mean? Peter wants to get a win in Dublin, he wants to get a win in Croke Park against this opposition and put a seed of doubt into their heads early.
And the value, like, you know, we talk about that they haven't done much pre-season, and you're probably heard the same thing as I did, Mike, about this holiday in Thailand. Like, it seems to have been, and I, you know, you'd know this a lot better than me, how much that this can actually help. Like, there was no team management actually went on the holiday. No team management whatsoever. I actually don't even think there was any from the county board went. And you'd say, oh my God.
Kerry.
Yeah. What kind of debauchery was that? But anybody I've actually spoken to or heard or even was talking to the players, they actually thought that it was a fantastic bonding exercise, and that for the first time, kind of the older group kind of gelled really with the younger group and got to know them, you know what I mean? Because you had two very distinct groups there, and now they're just, everybody who came back from it kind of came back, and the vibe seems to be that there's a great bit of a buzz in training. So what you've lost in terms of preparation, Mike, you might actually be getting in terms of what they got in Thailand.
And that was probably their first kind of team holiday. When was the last All-Ireland final they were in?
2016.
So, like, for those guys, well, yeah, but I mean, you have a couple of guys that would have been their first team holiday, like, you know, that would have been David Clifford and those guys. That was their first team holiday away with Kerry and stuff. No team management or anybody. That was probably a fun trip, I'd imagine. And Thailand, that sounds like a nice spot. So maybe, yeah, whatever they lost in running around in the pitch in Cairns, they might have gained in the bars of Bali or wherever they were, you know. So,
Koh Samui.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, but. What about Galway? What about Galway and under Pádraig Joyce now and John Dively and these guys? That's going to be, you know, that's going to be an interesting project. I watched their game against Roscommon the last day, and I didn't see any, you know, crazy differences in the way they're playing. But obviously, it's very early in the day. But how do you think that's going to play out?
Well, I'm actually looking forward to seeing how Galway work this year, because I think they're a team that has. Massively underachieved this past couple of years, and I don't think they worked well under Kevin. I don't think the players put in a sufficient amount of workload under Kevin either. And I know that maybe this is unfair to the Corfin boys, like, but there wasn't enough representation of Corfin boys on that team. And Party will be doing due to management, obviously, of Galway, but Party will be down to those players as well. So I think this year will be an interesting year for Galway. Can they now improve and develop beyond last year? And I think, been slightly critical of Galway last year, they had one kick-out plan, they had one defensive structure plan, they had limited options when they were coming to attack, despite the vast options that they have really on the field itself, you know. So I think they're a team that can significantly improve. The question here is whether Park will get it from them or not, and I suppose we've got to believe he will. So they're an interesting team, and they're the most interesting team that's going to be here in Division 1, and they're certainly under no pressure in relation to relegation or otherwise, irrespective if they haven't changed their system at the minute. But they will, as the league develops, they will improve, should improve at least, on the Park, and certainly coming into the Championship.
Yeah, I think Park kind of came out and said that he wants to play a bit more attacking football. I think he might have been critical of the way they've been playing the last few years, and Park obviously was involved with the under-20s Galway team last year. We played them, and they played super football. I know it's kind of different with under-20 to senior, but he came out saying he's going to be playing attacking football. So it's going to be interesting to see, and if they can replicate the way he used to play, I'm sure they're going to be an exciting team to watch. And I think they have all the ingredients to challenge at the top level, I think. So they're going to be probably one team we can watch during the league just to see how they're going to come in the Championship. You know?
Like, you'd imagine there'll definitely be a bounce in them, you know. Yeah. Like, I think you're saying, like, that Pádraig wants to play attacking football. I think Galway people wanted, you know, they were ready for a change. You know, I think you're probably a little harsh on Kevin. Like, Kevin definitely improved them early doors and made them, you know, made them a little bit harder to beat, maybe, while they weren't attractive to look at.
Yeah, my issue with Galway isn't so much just Kevin. It's also the players. I don't think the players put enough into the previous years. Now, while obviously, well, I was part of the setup in Mayo, they did beat Mayo, obviously. But even with that, I don't think they put enough strength or weight behind what maybe what Kevin was doing, even if they didn't like it, you know.
Yeah, and the Corifin thing then was like that. The paradox was killing him almost. The football that they were playing and how expansive that was, and that maybe hurt them as well. The fact that they were kind of getting to an All-Ireland final or getting deep into the provincials every year, and probably, you know, it slowed them down getting back involved with the county squad. But that probably didn't help his case. But they're going to be a very interesting watch under them. And the type of football they play, I think, like if they do go out with that attacking approach, Colm, it's definitely something that the people of Galway are gonna get behind pretty quickly.
I think as well, it's good to know, Mike, as well. And you were talking about the Sigerson and the fact, you know, teams that are out and benefiting, like John Dively obviously was with UCD. UCD are now out of the Sigerson. Like, I know we've all heard, and John has sat around this table, he's been mentioned in respect of a lot of inter-county jobs himself. The fact that himself and Pádraig are actually business partners as well, like, you know, I think there will be a very strong dynamic there. I mean, in terms of the swapping between manager and coach, there won't be any difficulty because obviously the two of them are work together every day. And I'd agree with Mac. I actually think looking through Division 1 there, you'd be most intrigued to see A, the type of football Galway play, and B, what kind of results it gets them, and whether they stick with it, Mac, then into the summer.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Obviously, some setbacks, change manager's approach, and certainly in the first year as a manager of an intercounty team, as a manager, Michael here.
Spoiler.
Yeah, as first year manager of an intercounty team, you're not really sure. You either you back yourself fully and you stay in your own sword, or you bow to pressure and change. Like, you know, and it'd be interesting to see how that goes, you know.
I agree.
And Mayo across, just over the border from him, James Horne's second year, obviously. Like, again, probably disappointed with the way things panned out for him last year. Great to see Tom Parsons back. Like, amazing kind of resilience for him after that horrific injury I saw him playing very recently. And those guys, they're going to be another one. I think, you know, while you're talking about his first year back, James Horne, obviously, it was his first year last year. You'd expect them, again, to have a little bit, you know, better idea of the way he wants them doing things this year, as opposed to, you know, when he was just in the door last year. So they're another crowd that are going to be looking to make sure that they can try and get to that provincial final and go take something in Connacht.
Yeah, I think it was probably, the league probably was more important last year, being James Horne's first year back, that the actually went and won the league. Actually coming in here, I had to think back who actually won the league last year, because I know you can read too much into these matches, but look, I don't think any of these teams, league is not going to be their number one aspirations this year. So I'm not sure, are you going to see them from the off going hammer and tongs? I think they're going to be more focused on trying to peak come Connacht Championship time.
I noticed there, just on our own notes from John Fogarty, Mike, the other day as well, like, presuming Matty Rowan is fit and good to go back in midfield, and presuming you have Parsons, just going back to our earlier debate and not wanting to reopen it, like, what does that mean for Aidan O'Shea? Where do you put him now, and how much are you influenced by the mark and the effects that you can, in other words, is he now going to be an out-and-out 14?
I'm not sure that his great strength is his ball winning over his head, really. Now, it doesn't have to be over your head, but if you have Matthew Owen, who's a real athlete and can get up and down the field and is a good ball player, and if Tom Parsons can, like, it's still a long way for him to get back to the level that he was at, you know, pre-injury, and you'd hope obviously that he could, but if he does, that's a great luxury for them to have. And if you have a situation where you can put Aidan O'Shea somewhere else, now he was effective in the middle of the field last year, but if you can put him in 14 or play him as a kind of a false 11 or something, and get him on ball from that 30 yards out, the way you were talking about Conor McManus, you know, he's a big unit with good hands, but he, you know, winning ball over his head isn't his strength, so that's why he never really goes and captures massive ball in the middle of the field. But it's a great luxury for James Horne to use.
It's gas that we're actually, I'm going to say this, like, but would you think it's fair to say, Mike, and you're in the mix in this one obviously, that Division 2 and Division 3 is where the real cut and thrust is going to be of the league this year? Obviously, for anybody who's kind of scratching their head and saying, what is he talking about? No, obviously the fact that if a team is relegated from Division 2 this year, they end up outside Tier 1 in the Championship. And obviously for Division 3, and that's why there's been all the talk of Cork, obviously they need to come up from Division 3 to be playing Tier 1, or else they need to beat Kerry on May 24th. Let me turn the tables on you just for a second and ask you, as a Division 2 manager, how much of that is actually up here at the minute in terms of secure Division 2 is number one priority?
Yeah, it is. Of course it is. Yeah, but it's not really in your thoughts at all, because you're like, all your, like, we're obviously playing Roscommon this weekend, and realistically that's all you're trying to focus on, and you're trying to get your own guys as right as you can and have a look at them and see what they do. And anything outside of this week is not really in your thinking. Obviously, in your longer term, you're saying, look, this is the goal and we got to try and keep that status. But look, I think Division 2 and Division 3, but Division 2 is one of the ones that you're going to go into the last day of the season, last game. And I think you're going to have a couple of teams in the mix for promotion and you're going to have a couple of teams in the mix for relegation. Mm. I think that's how close it is between a lot of the, I think a lot of those teams are going to beat each other along the way and you're going to take points off each other. And it will be one of those divisions where points difference in the end is probably going to separate, you know, maybe a couple of teams.
It might be, Mike, but I think the important point here is a good start. Like the team that wins first week out in the league, it rarely gets... Riley gets relegated, you know, so hence the pressure will be unleashed on Armagh and whoever else wants to stay up in Division 2 to actually win this weekend. So this weekend is actually very important, and yet they're coming in with injuries and not having much football behind them and maybe new management across the board as well, you know.
And I just see there in week 2, Mike, Eve Armagh in Portlaoise.
Yeah, handy start, yeah.
Yeah, a handy start, in fairness. And Cavan in your third game.
Yeah, so like, look, they're all tough games. Like, I mean, when you're like, realistically, we're playing Roscommon. Roscommon were a Super 8 team last year, Connacht champions. And like at 12 months ago, Laois were in Division 3. So that's a massive jump. And we know, obviously, how good they are. But look, you can't go into division with an inferiority complex. You got to go out and try and play and use the guys that you have to the best of their ability. And it's just interesting. One of the big things I found in that division, more so than Division 1, has been the amount of guys who have kind of opted away from the inter-county game. Like there was a big, you know, the big talk about Cathal MacShane and Tyrone and he was going, and you know, Mickey Hart was saying, you know, and it was the same in Kerry when Mark O'Connor left. Probably less so because Mark hadn't really established, he hadn't played senior inter-county football, whereas Cathal MacShane is an all-star. Mm. And it's probably the first one that we've really seen at that level to say, I'm going to Australia. And there's a big kind of furore. But I think the bigger issue, lads, is the amount of guys at senior inter-county level are saying, it's not for me right now, I'm taking a break, I want to walk away. And not to be criticising those fellas, if guys say, listen, I want to go travelling, or I want to concentrate on my work, or I want to concentrate on my family, I want to do other things, that's absolutely your own decision to do it. But as an organisation, we're probably failing those guys if they have to go and make that decision that they can't still work a job, look after their family and be an inter-county footballer. Mm. Then there's a bigger problem than one guy or top of the tree going to play Australian rules football, I think. And that's the one that we're not really talking about as much. And it's the one I would love to see addressed a little bit more. And the solutions it's tough to come by, but...
And you have solutions.
No, that's what you're here for.
Yeah, just going back to earlier point, I think similar to last year, like Division 2 was probably the most interesting division and competitive last year, because I think a lot of the teams in that division are around this at the same level, and on any given day any team could beat the next team, whether home or away. So, and as Tony said, the importance of staying up in Division 2 and getting promoted from Division 3 is going to be vital this year. In terms of a lot of players walking away, I can't see the reason why. I don't know, is it a societal thing? Is playing for your county number one in this current, say, 18, 19, 20 years, is it to be all and end all? I don't know. In this day and age, I don't know, are teams training more? I just think back to when I was playing maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Like, I think we are probably doing as much as they're doing today. I don't think they're doing more. I don't know, is it just the mindset of people now that... So, geez, is it number one? I know for, I can only speak on behalf of myself, like the be all and end all was playing for your county. I don't know. No, is that as important to the people in this current day and age?
No, I don't.
Why though?
I'm with you, Mike. I don't think that this is one of these coincidental straws in the wind that you can just blow off. Like, I mean, there's been too many players now over the last number of months has just said, you know what, but I think what it does. And it's interesting, Cullum, to hear you saying you reckon you were doing the same 5 or 6 years ago, because there definitely has been a societal shift from young lads in that age bracket that you're talking about, who are just saying, oh, you know what, this is too much. This is too much for me. This is too pressures. This is demanding too much of my time. This is dominating too much of my prime masculine 18 to 25 year old years, and you know what, I'm just not prepared to do it. I just need to get out. I mean, my own young fella is 22, like, and you know, he seems to be bursting every second night. There's a conversation of, I'm going to California, I'm going to Melbourne, I'm getting out of here, you know, and I'm kind of going, is Cork really that bad? Yeah. But it's the attitude of, there's, I feel like, and this is probably, I've no statistical evidence to say this, but I feel that some players, these lads, the vibe you're getting from them is they almost feel imprisoned by being an intercounty footballer or a hurler, that they're so, it's so demanding. And I do think
But is it the stuff beyond the field, Tony? Is it the measuring the energy index or yes. the sleep control or the food throughout the entire day? Like, is that the issue, that there's no release away
100%, from it? 100%. I was talking to an intercounty player over Christmas, and he basically said to me, like, I was saying, how many days a week you train, you know, at this time of the year? And he said, like, it's not a question of that. It's a 7 day a week gig. Yeah. Like, you know yourself, you've done this, Mike. I mean, it's so basically on your down days, I mean, yeah, you're watching your intake, you're watching your, you know, you're watching how many liters of water you're getting in, you know, you're talking about all that kind of stuff. It's a 7 day a week full on. And this was in January. This was, sorry, at the end of December. You know, this is actually, we're supposed to be at the quiet time of the year.
Yeah. And then I will say, for, you know, and I don't want to be talking about Leash, but there's, like, Ross Munley is 37 years of age. And, like, again, would get up in the morning and the first thing he could do is just think about how he can make himself better to still play football. You know, John O'Loughlin, Mark Timmins, Colin Begley, all guys that are gone past that 30-year-old mark, but still have an amazing energy and enthusiasm for keeping playing the game, you know. But it's just that maybe I think there's part of it is obviously, yeah, there has been a shift, but also there's a shift in a lot of teams now, because they kind of say, okay, is there a realistic path here for me to win something in the championship? Like, can I win a provincial title? Can I possibly compete for an All-Ireland? And realistically, outside of maybe, what are we talking as, maybe four teams, give it five teams, everybody else, really, the National League is your greatest chance to win something meaningful or to be competitive meaningfully, you know?
And a lot of them, now, I could be wrong here, but the majority of them players stepping away are not players from the top teams who have a realistic, they think, right, I have something to strive for here. A lot of, as I say, are the, I'm not called, they're called the so-called maybe Division 2, 3, 4 teams, where they say, What have I to play for here? You know, is it worth it?
Like, that's a key point.
Like, how many have Kerry or Dublin or Mayo? How many guys have opted out of that? You know, very, very few, well, if any.
But even the one who did, Mike, and I was talking to myself before Christmas, our lad from South Kerry, Mark Griffin. Yeah, I mean, the day that I actually spoke to Mark on the phone, even though it was with a top tier county, it was all those reasons. It was all the reasons about minutes, given what he was putting in. Apropos the minutes he was actually getting in terms of the reward, he was just getting to a point where he actually felt, this isn't worth it. Yep. This is not worth it at this stage. I'm 27, 28, I should be in my peak. I'm doing everything as much as the rest of the guys, and I'm getting, I think he got 30 seconds in the All-Ireland final replay.
Yeah, but where's this been driven from? Is this just the professional attitude that we're trying to bring through it? Is it the different sports team? Is it us trying to be better? Like, it doesn't have to be like this, surely, Mike. Like, this isn't the way it needs to be, is it?
Well, I wouldn't imagine so. Like, it's not the way you want it to go. But when you see the likes of Gary Brennan, like, Gary Brennan is one of the best footballers we have in the country, and he's still in his prime, and he's saying, no, I want to go travelling. And again, this isn't to say, oh, Gary Brennan shouldn't be going travelling. Gary Brennan can do whatever he wants, and he's we have no say what he wants to do, and there's no problem. But you'd love a situation that the GAA and the National Leagues and the Championship is put in such a way that it's more appealing to these guys, that you can still play intercounty football, and then, you know what you can do? You can go travelling then for the next 6 months, or you can go away and you can get off the grid and do whatever you want. But at the moment, it just seems like you were saying, it's a 7 day gig, 12 months of the year, and it's a little bit claustrophobic for some guys who want to do other stuff.
But didn't we have the chance to do that in restructuring the format, and the report that came out was effectively keep the status quo, no real change to it? All the competitions are remaining, everything else is pretty much the same thing, and we're going to put it into 1 year. Like, we had these opportunities, we just don't have somebody strong enough to try and force them through.
So what's your suggestion?
Well, it's clear the suggestion is that the county season needs to be dramatically cut to allow other seasons to take place, and particularly to have a break of some description. Like, with this idea of having a county season running from January, early January, start of February, right through till September, October. Like it's just doesn't work for the same players that are now under pressure with Sigerson and under pressure with under 20s, and then have a long club season as well. It's just not working.
Like, we were the official date for teams that did not make the Super 8s to start training was that you could start back training was the 15th of November. We started back the 15th of November. You know, there was not that we were back on this. I got a phone call in the middle of late October to know from an inter-county manager to know would we play a challenge game that weekend, the following weekend in October. I said, we haven't even started training. And if they were playing a challenge game at the end of October, they'd obviously been training but a couple of weeks before that. And that's, you know, that's the problem then as well, obviously. Like then if you're training through October, if you've been knocked out in June or whatever, and now you're starting in October for your first game in the end of January, you know, then it's like an 11-month gig, you know, and it's just...
And I still would argue, Mike, and I know this is an old one and I apologise for that, like, but I still think that we're front-ending the quality. I really think we're front-ending the quality. I think that the best of it is going to be over the next 8 weeks. You're going to have the Division 1 teams literally week on week on week. Kerry are playing Dublin the first day out. Then they've Galway the next day out. I forget who they actually have even the third day out. I think it's Tyrone the third and then Meath the fourth, Mayo, like they're all
great games.
They're all great games. And every county's in that position. And even if we go and we're going to chat now about Division 2, 3 and 4... Whatever way the league seems to be constructed this year, you've just discussed Division 2. You literally, as Mike said, you could pick six names out of a hat there and you don't know which way that they're going to finish up. Yeah. And Division 3, I really do think that the fact that Cork have dropped to Division 3 adds a real bit of intrigue and excitement. I mean, it's been said, and unfortunately it's been rammed on Ronan McCarthy's, every time Ronan McCarthy steps up in front of a microphone the last 3 months, some fella says to him, this is the most important league campaign in Cork football's history.
Of all time.
Like, yeah. And you're kind of, but you know what? It is.
Cullum, isn't it? I mean, in fairness, in terms of what it means if they don't finish in the top two.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, obviously going down to Division 3 wasn't part of the plan last year, but similar, I think that it was by points difference or score difference they got relegated. Just to show us again how competitive Division 2 was last year. But yeah, I think Ronan and the management team would have probably looked at these fixtures when they came out first day. And I suppose their priority now is to try and get Cork promoted to Division 2 because, look, I suppose a county the size of Cork and tradition, they won't want to be playing in the second tier division. And that's going to start, as Tony and Les said earlier on, like, the first game is huge and they have Offaly at home now Saturday night, so Ron and Les are going to be sure
to runaway winners. They're the outstanding team by a sight in Division 3. Like this is for any division here, this is a walkover for Cork in all honesty. Like,
you know. And what happened then when you actually saw the McGrath Cup final and you saw what happened that night above in Limerick? I mean, was that a good thing actually for Cork, or was that a serious alarm call? Mike, what did you see when you heard that result? No,
I watched it actually. Yeah, I watched it on. It was streamed.
We streamed it.
Yeah. I thought it was the best possible result that could have happened for Cork. Yeah, because I saw the game obviously below against the Kerry under 20 team in the McGrath Cup, and they were just awesome. Like they looked unbelievable. And you're saying this team are going to be competing the mind division 3. These guys are going to be like they'll
Super
give
eights.
Kerry a right go in the semi final, and you wouldn't bet either way of the Munster and then Super 8s. They're very competitive. And then you see the game above against Limerick. And Limerick, to their credit, were really, really good now on the same night and kicked unbelievable scores. But if you're Ronan McCarthy and you're looking at that and you're saying, you know what, no, lads, we can live without the McGrath Cup.
Yeah.
But like this really focuses these guys for going up here. I mean, they're playing like Leitrim in their second game, Down, Tipperary, Derry, Loud. Like they should be looking to run the table there because of the quality they have. And anything other than getting out would be very disappointing, obviously.
Tony McEntee, Cullum there, says like Cork are going to be runaway winners of Division 3.
Like Division 3 is over after they play Derry because they've already beaten Down and Derry, that's it.
I hope so, Tony. But yeah, similar to last year, I think Cork actually in Division 2 drew their first game last year. And it goes back to like getting off to a good start. And I think if they win Saturday night, like it'll take some of the pressure off. Like there is pressure, like there's pressure in every division, but there's extra pressure in Division 2. And I think if they can win Saturday night, it might open up the shoulders for lads. Now, having said that, I just see during the week there, a few of their key lads have been injured. Brian Hurley's out, injury. Mark Collins is injured. Obviously, Paul Kerrigan, Nima Lads, Luke are out. So there's still a lot of fellas making their championship debut at the same time. And
some of those under-20s, though, are very exciting, Colin, to be fair now.
You tell a talk about the four lads. Yeah,
so you've Paul Ring, Connor back. You've Brian Hartnett, wing forward. And obviously you've Kyle O'Mahony and Damien Gore. Connor in full, I think, and I think there's two other lads, Colm O'Callaghan and Sean Meehan, on the bench, but very deserving of their place on the panel and the team, and very good lads, having worked with them last year, like, excellent attitude, like, we had a super bunch working last year, yeah. And as you say, it's going to be difficult. We knew that it's going to take lads time to step up. We knew, obviously, 7 or 8 weren't going to come straight on, but I think probably one to watch out is Paul Ring, is talking to Tony earlier on about Paul, a tigerish, old school style cornerback. You won't get much change out of him, a cornerback. So it'll be a great opportunity for them lads to develop and get a few runs out in Division 3 against the different teams travelling away. So there's a learning curve for some of the players, and hopefully the injuries for the more senior lads, they can come back in near the middle of the league and the latter stages of the league. But as I say, huge pressure on Cork to come up, so hopefully they can do the business with a win Saturday night.
Who's likely, Tony, to be kind of competing with them for to get up there for Division 3 final and get out of that division?
Derry. So I think it's between them and between Cork and Derry. I think Down's carrying a lot of injuries. They've obviously Caelan Mooney recently hurt, so I'm not sure what stage he's going to be back playing football.
Derry? Why are Derry jumping out at you?
Why Derry? Because yeah. I think Derry actually have enough talent. They've a physically mobile and athletic outfit. And I do think that if you look at Rory Gallagher and his success in Fermanagh, like Rory Gallagher nearly took Fermanagh to Division 1 last year. Mm-hmm. And that's a Fermanagh team, 2 years ago, that was a Fermanagh team that's actually a very limited Fermanagh team with a very limited forward division. So whatever Rory will do, he'll have a structured outfit. They'll be well disciplined. They'll stick to the plan of some description. And what he'll end up doing is he'll bring a Derry team, which is like middle-of-the-road Derry team, to be competitive. You mightn't like a lot of what you see on it, but he'll have them a very competitive outfit, and you know that'll bring a level of success. And if they can merge that with their natural flair and ability, then they're certainly a team that's on the way up. Mm-hmm. And they'll push ahead, hopefully, of most of them other teams.
Again, we were just talking to Ronan the other night, Mac. I think consistency and attitude will be Cork's biggest challenges, because let's face it, every game is going to be a dogfight for Cork. Like, Cork are the mark in this division. Cork yeah. are the hunted. Cork are the one. Like, so you can imagine now in week two, above in Carrick and Shannon, and Leitrim welcoming Cork to Carrick and Shannon, saying, I'd say, no, you boys haven't been here too often. I tell you, we're going to give you a right warm welcome. And if the players, if the group aren't mentally up for that, then you're going to be embarrassed and you're going to be turned over. And there is enough. You look through them. I mean, Tony Mac, you talk about Louth. Like, Longford obviously winning last weekend. Like, obviously are in a small bit of a role.
Yeah.
I know that Keane O'Neill actually was up watching that O'Byrne Cup final. And, you know, I was talking to someone who was chatting to him afterwards. And he said, like, Offaly have some very lively forwards. So, like, could cause problems if Cork weren't at it. I genuinely think you're right. If it was purely down to numbers, ability, depth of squad, no problem. But, like, Colm O'Neill knows way better than me or any of us. Like, it's just that you never really knew on a given week what you were going to get from Cork. And Ronan said, like, consistency is the key for them.
Yeah, but, it is, of course, absolutely. But you're infusing that Cork team with a couple of really, really good under-20 players mm-hmm. who are coming off a great season, winning an All-Ireland. Like, and really cutting edge forwards as well, like guys who are just really good finishers. And I think that kind of stuff, like you're talking about going up to Carrick and Shannon, that's the kind of stuff that can make a team, you know, going in there as young guys, going into a place that they've never been before, hugely excited by the opportunity to play with Cork and to get out in there and get a couple of wins, fall over the line by a couple of points here and there, coming down the road, and it's the best thing that you could ever do.
And you've Keane O'Neill back involved from this year as well, helping coaching in a role that he's probably best at, you yeah. know, and probably more focused at, and maybe all those things together. Listen, this is, we're looking at this and thinking that Cork are going to struggle in Division 3, then, you know, Cork have more problems than we see at the minute. Cork are not going to struggle in Division 3. They're going to push right through this. They're going to be a serious contender for All Ireland if they get a few things sorted out in it. So I think you know, we're trying to look for a story in Cork. There is no story in Cork here. Like this is straightforward.
Right,
there's no
story.
Right,
the
yeah, no, I know. They should get out of the division, but it won't be without stumble.
Yeah, like Donner team, like, I think would be probably dark hours in that division. Great manager and Paddy Talley. Obviously, they always play a super brand of football, and you'll have a few of the Kilcoolas. I'm not sure when they'll be back. So I think Cork actually have Down at home, which is probably a help in that scenario. But I think they could be ones to watch out for as well. They'll probably be going in for promotion as well.
Mm. Tony, you mentioned the McGrath Cup final, obviously, and Limerick and Billy Lee getting that win. Like, how do you see their campaign going in Division 4? Like, that, like, Billy Lee was very quick to say immediately after that game, you know, this is great and we're delighted to win the McGrath Cup, but realistically it's all about the league for us and getting out of
Division
4.
Well, Billy Lee, actually, funny, he's a real football evangelist. He reminds me a small bit of Colm Collins in Clare, and it's a tough gig for Billy Lee above in Limerick. And so there was a part of me, when I saw that result, I was kind of smiling and kind of saying, like, what a great night for Billy Lee. And it might only be in the McGrath Cup, but funny enough, I actually was talking to a buddy of mine up in UL, I'd say a week or two before, and he just threw this name, Danny Neville, out at me. And I was kind of like, well, who's Danny Neville? Like, well, I tell you one thing, you know, there's a lot of fellas know who Danny Neville is. The night he played at 14, the night against Cork, I think he was Aidan Brown, he was on, Cullen, wasn't it, in Newmarket? Yeah, I think he was, and he caused a world of trouble. So, like, in Division 4, like, Division 4, I mean, you know, people are saying, Division 4, like, but even there, like, it's, A, it's a dogfight, but B, you've all sorts of little nuggets and little elements. I mean, Paul Galvin, like, you know, down in Wexford, you know, and he's had his own bit of headlines already, and what is that about? I have to say, A new manager goes in, looks around, doesn't necessarily like what he sees, cleans house a small bit and drives on, and suddenly it's a massive controversy. Why were you going to bring in a Paul Galvin if you just wanted to maintain the status quo? Of course he's going to shake things up. Of course he's going to try something different. Like, they're in Division 4. There's only one way to go, so he's got to actually try something different, you know?
Yeah, you're staying at this mic, are you?
Okay. I think a lot of that was made of not very much. Like, there was, you know, a couple of guys were cut from the panel, and a couple of other fellas says, I don't like what you did, so I'm going to go as well. Fair enough, lads. Thanks very much, you know. But it clearly wasn't working before, and the guy's trying to do, I haven't a clue what he's doing, but it just seemed to be the whole thing was blown up because it was probably Paul Galvin, you know what I mean? If it was somebody else, it mightn't quite have been the big story that it turned into.
Division 4, I think, funny enough, because 2 years ago Louth never won a match, last year they get promoted. Mm. You know what I mean? So there's an awful lot of swings can happen in that. And I think the swings we're likely to see this year is I would like to see Antrim have more than what Antrim are a team that should be competing for promotion out of Division 4. Limerick should not be in Division 4. Like, they're more than capable of being out of Division 4. And I think this year, having not won a game last year, Sligo now will turn out and be slightly more competitive than they were before. Like, and I think they can do, because a lot of these teams they're well capable of beating. You know, so Sligo should be running up there, certainly third or fourth in that division if they get the thing together.
Mike, I forgot to ask you, one county that slipped by in Division 2 is Kildare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be an intrigue as well, because, like, obviously Jack's first job outside of Kerry, you know, and I'm actually very interested in that because you played under Jack, you know, he had a very, very successful period as Kerry manager. And then when he was appointed, Tony, as the under-20 manager, everybody was like, oh, what a great appointment. And it just collapsed. Like, they didn't win anything, lost a bad, was it an All-Ireland semi-final to Kildare? Mm-hmm. Really, you know, like, and so he's back now, obviously, into a Kildare setup that, you know, maybe has lost a couple of players, is in transition, obviously, Keane is out of it. You're going to be playing them. And probably the pressure, would you say, is probably on them in terms of there would be an expectation of promotion?
I would imagine so, yeah. You know, that's the way Jack wouldn't have gone in there with the idea of staying in Division 2. He wants to get them back up as high as they can, obviously. And look, Daniel Flynn coming back into the mix for them is a big thing. You know, he's one of those guys that's a real game changer, and to have him back and firing. you know, it's, you know, kicking ball into that guy, winning ball, mark or no mark. I saw him blow in Tralee a couple of years ago, and he absolutely tortured the Kerry defence all night from play and from everything. And like, yeah, Jack will be absolutely delighted to get that guy back into the mix. But it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be very interesting for him because, you know, themselves and Roscommon and a couple, they'll, you know, there's probably a couple of three teams there maybe that really fancy themselves to get the two spots to get out of the division, and Kildare are definitely one of those. Yeah.
And Jack, you'd have to say, would be the type of guy. You've got Daniel Flynn back, and it would be very interesting to see how he works with young Jimmy Hyland. Because that Jimmy Hyland a couple of years ago looked like one of the most sensational young footballers in the country. And then he came in last year in his first year as senior. Maybe it was a physical thing, didn't really happen for him. But you'd imagine, Mac, like if he's playing off of Daniel Flynn, like he could, you know, this could be 2020 could kind of be Hyland's breakthrough year. You know, he's just one of those players that you'd like to, you know, keep an eye on. Is there any more of those guys? You name check Paul Ring from Aha Bullock, like Jimmy Hyland, anybody up around Armagh, even Mac, that we should be kidding. Not Rian O'Neill is obviously there a bit now at this stage, but you know, lads from Cork, Kerry, Dublin, anything like that? Any little names or nuggets we should be keeping an eye out for? I mean, there's nobody outside Kerry, Mike, will know Paddy Clifford, for instance. No. And I'm be very interested to see how much game time he gets. Like, he's kind of one of these deep-lying, aggressive centre-forwards, very direct. Do you think, Mike, is he at that level?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't even know, to be honest, Tony, who's in there with them at the moment, you know. But he was a guy, obviously, that was brought in initially. And he has potential, obviously. You know, he's like a Declan O'Sullivan light in terms of his ball carrying. He can, you know, he's a really good ball carrier. He's a good kick passer. It wouldn't be quite at the level that, you know, maybe that senior at the county level yet. And it'll be just really hurt by the fact that, you know, the Sigerson results have gone the way they have, and maybe Kerry don't have as much injury problems as maybe they could have in other years, and he may not get a huge amount of opportunities. It remains to be seen. But there's a few of those guys, obviously, now that did very well in the county championship, but he was probably the biggest, you know, beneficiary from East Kerry winning the county championship blowing Kerry.
Is
Ryan
O'Brien back in there?
He is, yeah, back in there. And it'll be interesting to see him. Like, this is his second year now, and he would have played in the middle of the field, I think, in one of those challenge games, and did very well. So the year's conditioning and being around the whole thing might bring him on a little bit, and he's another kind of wild card that might jump out at you.
I think one for in Division 1 is Peter Canavan's young lad, Dara Canavan. I seen him first hand this year with Tyrone in the under-20s, an absolutely unbelievable player. Small, stocky, skillful, intelligent, is well able to mix it up as well, and I think what he probably lacks in height, he definitely has all the attributes to be a top quality player. Reminds me a small bit like when Domer gone well, this Mark Poland kind of very skillful, jinky kind of character. I think if he can get a bit of game time in Division 1, I think he's probably one to watch out for.
Anybody else, Tom?
No, not to mind, to be honest with you. Like, but some of these players will come through, and I think the key to good inter-county management is allowing these people time to develop and giving them that opportunity to come in, give them some minutes and develop them, maybe a wee bit. Similar to maybe what Moreno may or may not be doing with Troy Parrott or something like that. Yeah. You know, it's about just giving them time and giving them a chance and being happy that they don't perform on a day and building it through, you know. Because there's a long way from 18, 19. Like, we're not all Sean O'Shea and David Clifford, you know.
Yeah, and there isn't too many guys physically even at that level come out of under 20 or whatever and jump straight into that. We'll wrap it up, I suppose, in a minute. But just give me, I want you to give me your who's your likely winner in each division running down through the top. So give me your Division 1. I'll start with you, Tony. Who's your pick out of Division 1 to start this?
So Division 1, Donegal.
Division 2,
I'm going to go for Kildare in Division 2. Division 3 is a runaway at Cork, and Division 4 in this case, I'm going to go with Limerick in Division 4.
Limerick, can I just see Billy Lee there is in his seventh, you know, his seventh year, fourth year, like, and they were finished seventh last year. So, I mean, that would be a big jump for him, obviously, to come from second last in the division to jump out of there. Colin, what about yourself, man? What are you thinking out of Division 1?
I'm going to go with Galway Division 1.
Galway are definitely going to be an interesting one, man, aren't they? Yeah,
yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how they go. Division 2, I'm going to go with Laois. Division 2, if I had to put money on it, I'm going to say Armagh.
Armagh, yeah.
Home vote in Division 3, Cork. And
are you as confident as a runaway as Tony's talking about?
Not so much a runaway. I'd be very hopeful. But look, let's be fair. If Cork have any ambitions, or if they want to follow up on the kind of progress they made last year, like, there's no point saying that being competitive is going to be good enough. Like, simple as, you're just going to have to get out of it.
I suppose, just to give Amar a minute there, is that Amar are coming into this league now with good form off the back of last year, but they are coming in with injuries and problems. So if we don't get that really good start in the first couple of games, and I include beating Leash away at home, then we won't actually get to that stage, and it's the first two or three games that are crucial.
It's
for us.
Importance, like, as I said, of the first of a good start is vital in this league.
And we went through the league last year having 3 and 4 point cushions coming in the last couple of minutes and lost those, ended up with draws and defeats, and they were sort of tough results for us. So I think this year, if we get a good start and we can move in early, we're certainly at contention for promotion there.
Yeah, do you give us our four Division Four?
Division Four, I'm going to go with Carlow. I think they were relegated last year from Division 3, which is probably after an unbelievable year before that. So I think they're probably good enough to get out of Division 4 with the experience that they have from being in Division 3 for the last 2 years.
Very good. We'll have to revisit those later in the year and see how the boys get on. Yeah, put them on a poster there on the wall.
Michael?
No, I don't get a vote, man. No,
we'll let you out of Division 2.
Yeah. So look, we're going to wrap it up there for today. Thanks very much, everybody, for listening. And again, you can tune in every Monday on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Irish Examiner / podcast. Thanks again, and talk to you soon.